Well, a few weeks ago, I was filling in on another show here on the Big 550 and called up my friend Phil Plate to talk about his new TV show, which is called Bad Universe. That first episode aired a few weeks ago. There are still two more to go. And the good news for Phil is that episode number two has been slotted by the Discovery Channel to air next Wednesday night, right after the season premiere of The Mythbusters. I asked Phil to come back on and give us a little preview of that this morning. Hi, Phil. How are you?
Good morning.
So episode two coming up next Wednesday will take us down the path of alien invasion. In the first one, you told us about how we have to do something about asteroids that could eventually come to Earth and give us a dinosaur-killing kind of effect yet again. This time around, you're talking about alien invasions. But I know you personally, and I know you don't believe that aliens have visited us here on this planet, right?
Well, no. Seriously, the idea is, first of all, are aliens out there? Is there life in space? And we talk about that on the show. And then we say, can they come here? And if they're out there, you know, are there intelligent aliens? Are there humanoid aliens? Or if some sort of life is out there and it can make it to Earth, what would it really be like and how would it really get here? And we talk about all kinds of things like the Drake equation, which is this famous equation that tells you, it's basically an estimate of how many civilizations might be out there in the galaxy. And it's a pretty cool idea. You say how many stars are out there, how many planets can support life. And you can use that to estimate that there might be as many as a couple of dozen advanced races out there. But then we say, gee, if they're out there, how do they get here? And then we go through a lot of fun to show how aliens might actually try to come to Earth and eat us or whatever it is that they would try to do in Hollywood movies.
You know, the amusing thing about aliens in Hollywood movies is how human-like they always are in form. They're always bipeds. They always have two eyes. They're usually almond-shaped. They have ears and two arms and all this sort of stuff. What makes me laugh when I think about that is, if you were a science fiction writer and you were going to create an alien being, couldn't you look around at your own planet and see all the other living things on Earth that don't look like humans and get some inspiration from them?
You know, that's a good thought, and that's the way I've always sort of approached it. But after talking with Seth Shostak, who's an astronomer with the Search for Extraterrestrial Intelligence, I'm starting to wonder, because, you know, fish are designed to, you know, they've evolved to live in the water, and birds have evolved to live in the air and all that sort of thing. But if you want to have an intelligent life form that can manipulate its environment and create technology, which is the kind we're really interested in, although any sort of life would be fascinating and wonderful to find, if you want to talk to somebody and have them talk back, there are things they need. They need a way of processing information. You want that information to be transmitted rapidly to that processing center. In this case, I'm talking about a brain. So the sense organs would be kind of clustered around the brain. Seeing is really a good way of sensing your environment. So is hearing. So is smell, right? And you want all these organs near the brain. And if this is starting to sound like a human head, well, you know, that's actually not a bad way of designing an intelligent creature. So I'm not going to say that aliens that we find that are intelligent, if we ever do, are going to look like us or even remotely like us. But I suspect that we'll be able to see similarities in the way they're put together with the way we are as well.
Now, there was news this week from some of your fellow astronomers about a new planet, an Earth-like planet that's been found. What do you know about that story, Phil?
This is actually pretty cool news. You know, we have almost 500 planets we've discovered orbiting other stars. And there are a variety of methods of finding them. And this one actually looks at the star, and as the planet orbits the star, it's like in a little game of tug-of-war. And we can detect that. We can't detect the motion in the star as it makes a little circle as the planet orbits it, but we can detect a change in its light through the Doppler shift, the same sort of thing that makes a motorcycle go as it goes past you. Well, the same thing works with light, and so we can detect this and use it to find planets around other stars. This star, Gliese 581, is a dinky little cold red dwarf about 20 light years from the sun, which is relatively close. And we now know it has six planets orbiting it, which makes it, a solar system. And one of these planets, Gliese 581G, is actually got about three times the mass of the Earth and orbits the star at the right distance to have liquid water on its surface. Now, that's really all we know. We don't know anything about this planet. We don't know if it's a giant planet made of styrofoam or a little planet made of iron, or if it has an atmosphere or not, if it has water or anything about it like that. We just know that, as far as we can tell, this is the most likely candidate we have for finding liquid water on the surface of another planet. There's no way to know at this point. Our technology is not advanced enough to be able to detect this. But what it does mean is that these kind of planets must be common in the galaxy, because this one is so close, and we've just started looking, that once we start really surveying the galaxy, we're going to find millions of these things.
And when you talk about aliens and the prospect of an alien invasion or even alien life elsewhere, would they have to come from someplace that has water?
Well, not necessarily. And everybody always asks that. Isn't it chauvinistic of us to look for water because we're based on water? And the thing is, water is just such a tremendously useful chemical to have things happen. It stays liquid over a wide range of temperature. It dissolves things very well. And other chemicals can flow in it and combine really easily. You can make complex chemicals inside of it, organic chemicals that can build up to form life. Now, you can do this with other liquids like, say, ammonia, but it's not nearly as easy. And water is extremely common out in space. We see it all over the place. If you look in our own solar system, there are entire moons orbiting Saturn and Jupiter that are composed of ice, frozen water, and we see it in its liquid state in other places as well. So it just seems like, you look where the light is good if you're looking for something. And in this case, that's a metaphor for finding water, because it makes the formation of life so much easier.
Talking with Dr. Phil Plait, the host of the Discovery Channel show Bad Universe, which will have its second episode airing next Wednesday after the premiere of this season's kickoff show for the Mythbusters. I mentioned earlier, Phil, that your first episode was about asteroids, planet-killing asteroids. And I'm curious, because you urged action on that show, have you seen any action from anybody who could do anything about getting us into any kind of mode where we can do something about a planet-killing asteroid, should one end up in our path?
I wish there had been enough people watching that show to phone their congressman and say, we need to do something about this. We had a pretty good audience, but it wasn't, in the 40 to 50 million range. But honestly, there already is some procedures in place to take care of this. For example, Rusty Schweikart, who was the Apollo 9 astronaut, is very vocal and in fact is working with the UN to try to determine what to do if we see an asteroid headed our way. My friend Dan Durda is an astronomer, and he was with me when we filmed a lot of that show, when we were blowing up holes in the desert and trying to see what would happen when we impact asteroids with pellets at high speed to see if we could push them out of the way. And Dan is also a member of this foundation called the B612 Foundation, which is investigating methods of finding and figuring out what to do with killer asteroids that might be headed our way. The difficulty is getting people to take this seriously, especially Congress and NASA. NASA is it hasn't really poo-pooed this idea, but it's not really spending a lot of time and effort in doing this. And I suspect it's going to take a small impact, not a city, destroyer or anything like that, but some sort of thing like that before we're going to actually see a lot of people demanding action on an event that we can totally prevent.
I've only got a minute or so left here, Phil, but I've got to ask you, since you mentioned NASA, they were talking in Congress this week about the new bill authorizing funds for NASA. How did that go?
In the end, it went pretty well. This was the authorization bill so that they can say, later we will fund NASA, but here's how much we want to fund NASA for, and here's what we want to do with it. And the funding bill was for 3 years, up through 2013. And, I liked the bill. I had some issues with it. I always have issues with things like this. There are always minor things to complain about. But in general, they're freeing up $19 billion a year, which is more than usual, with a little bit more every year. And the big news is that a lot of this money goes toward developing a new rocket system to take over after the shuttle finishes up later this year or early next year. There's money towards private space, building rockets by private companies, which is coming along very nicely. as well as a healthy amount of money for scientific exploration of the universe, the sun, and the earth. So, you know, all in all, I'm pretty happy. I'd like to see this signed, and I'd like to see NASA get the money it needs so that we can understand the universe better, because that's really what we should be doing.
Scientist and astronomer Dr. Phil Plait, whose Discovery Channel show is called Bad Universe. It'll air again next Wednesday night, right after the season premiere of Mythbusters, much of it based on Phil's book, Death from the Skies. And you can also find him online reading his blog at badastronomy.com. Phil, it's always a pleasure. I hope Episode 2 is a hit and that they give you a great slot for Episode 3 and then say, you know what, let's make this a series that runs as long as the Mythbusters have.
From your lips to the Discovery Network's executives' ears. Thanks, Paul.
I'll talk to you soon. Dr. Phil Plait here with Paul Harris. This is the McGraw Show on the Big 550 KTRS. I'll step aside now for Charles Jaco and then John Brown and Frank and the gang and Cardinal Baseball tonight. Thanks for listening to the Big 550 KTRS.